Penguin Random House Audio presents Brought Forth on This Continent, Abraham Lincoln and American Immigration by Harold Holzer. Read for you by Mark Bramhall. In loving memory of the immigrant grandparents who made me American. Eva Goodman Holzer, Romania, circa 1880 to 1965. David Holzer, Austria, now Ukraine, 1876 to 1952. Fanny Eder Last, Galicia, now Poland, 1874 to 1927. Harry Last, Austria, now Ukraine, 1873 to 1947. Introduction. For the encouragement of immigration. I regard our immigrants as one of the principal replenishing streams appointed by Providence to repair the ravages of internal war and its wastes of national strength and health. Abraham Lincoln, Annual Message to Congress, December 6, 1864. Even under ideal circumstances, it would have been difficult for Abraham Lincoln to surpass his recent masterpiece at Gettysburg. And now, with a fresh rhetorical challenge awaiting him, he fell ill. Lincoln arrived back in Washington from Pennsylvania late on November 19, 1863, suffering from variola, a supposedly mild form of smallpox that proved severe enough to send the exhausted orator to his sickbed for weeks. By some accounts, Lincoln did not return to his White House desk until mid-December. Tellingly, the valet who tended him during his convalescence, a black man, caught smallpox too, and died. Debility notwithstanding, Lincoln faced an unavoidable deadline for not only a new manuscript, but also a much lengthier one. With the 38th session of the House and Senate set to convene on December 7th, the President was expected to present his annual message to Congress, the equivalent of today's State of the Union address, the following day. This would be his third such message, and the first to a Congress whose Republican strength had shriveled following setbacks in the most recent midterm elections. Nonetheless, Lincoln intended the message to include something dramatic, a historic proposal to encourage, and perhaps even financially underwrite, foreign immigration to the United States. By some accounts, Lincoln composed the entire message in bed. The remarks for Gettysburg had been, in Lincoln's folksy description, short, 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 barely 270 words. No such brevity ever satisfied Congress. By custom, the House and Senate anticipated a detailed summary on both foreign and domestic affairs. To be expected was a full accounting of federal spending, as well as an update on the ongoing war against the rebels. Congress would particularly desire reports on the enforcement of the President's Emancipation Proclamation. "I shall not attempt to retract or modify it," he would pledge. And on the first months of African-American military recruitment, which he would report, gave to the future a new aspect. Tradition also called for the President to use this yearly opportunity to specify his legislative priorities. Here is where the bedridden Lincoln summoned what strength he could muster to craft a historically bold proposal. "I again submit to your consideration," he declared 20 paragraphs into his text, "the expediency of establishing a system for the encouragement of immigration." From 1830 through the outbreak of the American Civil War, nearly 10 million Europeans had migrated to the United States, North as well as South, forever upending the demography, culture, and voting patterns of the nation, especially in its teeming urban centers. In the wake of such overwhelming change, resistance to immigration and immigrants metastasized until forces arose that were determined not only to restrict foreigners from entering the country, but to disenfranchise, demonize, and occasionally terrorize those who had already arrived, settled, and earned citizenship here. And still the refugees poured across oceans and borders to reach our shores, their growing numbers inevitably challenging and ultimately redefining what it meant to be American. Only when civil war broke out in 1861 did foreign migration to the United States slow significantly. Prospective immigrants understandably shrank from the notion of abandoning one troubled country to relocate to another. To some Americans, the reduction in new foreign arrivals came as an answered prayer. For decades, immigration, particularly by Catholics, had stirred resistance, resentment, and in some cases, violence, destruction, and death. Politically, these tensions split and ultimately destroyed the old Whig Party, in which Lincoln had spent most of his political career, inspiring anti-immigration nativists to form a political organization of their own. The realignment had driven many immigrants into the ranks of the Democrats, who welcomed new arrivals with a warm embrace and a swift path to citizenship and voter registration. The issue roiled the country and exposed an ugly vein of bigotry in the American body politic, and its intractability deflected mainstream attention from the country's original sin, slavery. Now President Lincoln looked beyond the long-time national divide over immigration to propose his revolutionary idea. Although he reported in his message that refugees were again flowing with greater freedom into America, their numbers had yet to reach their robust, if bitterly contested, pre-war levels, and the reduction was causing what Lincoln called a great deficiency of laborers in every field of industry, especially in agriculture and in our mines, as well of iron and coal as of the precious metals. In other words, America could no longer rely on American workers to fill American jobs. Employers needed to look elsewhere, namely overseas, for manpower. True enough, the Lincoln administration had, in a sense, contributed to this crisis-level deficiency. There were now as many as 1 million men enrolled in the Union Armed Forces to fight the Confederacy, and since spring, the newly introduced military draft had been wresting laborers from farms and factories and redeploying them into the army. As Lincoln saw matters, their necessary absence from the home front now threatened national productivity of civilian goods as well as war materiel. Whether the situation might ease long-time hostility to foreign laborers would be left for another day. First, Lincoln urgently wanted robust immigration to resume, even if the government had to provide the means to accelerate it. As Lincoln forcibly argued in his message, the time had come to regard immigrants not as interlopers, but as assets, not as a drain on public resources, but as a source of national wealth and strength. He expressed it this way: "While the demand for labor is thus increased here, tens of thousands of persons destitute of remunerative occupation are thronging our foreign consulates and offering to emigrate to the United States, if essential, but very cheap, assistance can be afforded them. It is easy to see that under the sharp discipline of civil war, the nation is beginning a new life. This noble effort demands the aid and ought to receive the attention and support of the government." Lincoln might not have realized it, but in making his appeal, the 16th president echoed sentiments that the first president had expressed generations before. As George Washington once declared, "The bosom of America is open to receive not only the opulent and respectable stranger, but the oppressed and persecuted of all nations and religions, whom we shall welcome to participation of all our rights and privileges, if by decency and propriety of conduct they appear to merit the enjoyment." Of course, Washington later backtracked and advised his successor, John Adams, that with respect to emigration, except of useful mechanics, there is no need of extra encouragement. An emphasis.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?